So, Joan, just back from Cyprus with Pope Benedict XVI. You had a very interesting trip, I imagine.
It really, really was fascinating. I did not know this island republic, had never been there, will very happily go back, and especially to Paphos, where the papal plane landed. And, of course, a lot of people said, how come he didn't land at Larnaca, which is the airport that would serve Nicosia, or Lefkosia, which is the Greek name for the capital. And the Pope actually went to Paphos because of the huge archaeological and fascinating archaeological ruins there. And he said, in his own talk, and we knew this before he went, he was going in the footsteps of St. Paul and Barnabas. And one thing I don't recall the Pope saying, he may have, but Barnabas was a native of Cyprus. He was born on Cyprus. So the Pope went there because also there's a beautiful big pillar among the excavations at Paphos that they say the Apostle Paul was tied to this and whipped. So they did read at this ecumenical service with the Orthodox. They did read the gospel from the Acts of the Apostle about Paul and Barnabas traveling to Paphos specifically. The Bible says that. And it was a very moving ceremony, very wonderful way to welcome the Holy Father. And there were so many interesting things about this trip. First of all, it was the Pope's first trip. I don't know if it was a Pope's first trip.
I think it was.
Well, to Cyprus, yes. But it was also his first trip to an Orthodox majority country.
Right.
So, and the reason you really have any Muslims on the island is because in 1974, Turkey invaded and occupied the northern third, 37% of the island.
And today it is still a divided island.
It is still a divided island. There have been UN resolutions. And the only people in the world to recognize the northern part, which the Turks call the Northern Turkish Republic of Cyprus, the only people are Turkey. I mean, the UN, the rest of the world doesn't recognize it. So, and UN resolutions don't seem to have any teeth to them at all in situations like this. So the Turks have been there. They are not liked at all, obviously, by the Greek Cypriots who inhabit the rest of the island.
But there's actually a line, isn't there?
There's a green line. There's a buffer zone, and then there's a green line. And it's called a green line because a British general, I can't remember his name as we speak, when they were had to divide the island, he has a map on the wall. He took a green pen, and he simply wrote it in green, so it's called the Green Line. And so, because many peoples over the millennia have lived in and dominated and governed and controlled Cyprus. The list is quite long. I mean, Romans and Greeks and Byzantines and Venetians. There's incredible Venetian walls around the capital city of Nicosia. But there is the occupation. Turkey has 35,000 troops in this northern third of the country. And it's really only at the border. I crossed into it on foot in the capital of Nicosia. I just went up Ledras Street, and you see a whole bunch of uniformed people. Those are the Greek Cypriots. And you fill in a little piece of paper, simply first name, last name, passport number, and your country. And then as you get to the Turkish-occupied side, they see that and stamp it. But you do have to reverse the procedure, you know, to leave. But it's not like I walked into town. I didn't go into the country. So, and that's where you are going to
see. But it's nothing like the checkpoints in the Holy Land, is it?
No,
where you have to wait for hours.
No, and you don't even know in the Holy Land if you're going to get through, you know.
Right.
It's very cordial. And, of course, the reason they want you in the north, at least in Nicosia, the capital, they want you in that part. It's one great big bazaar, to be honest with you, and store after store after store. Although, interestingly enough, I saw a street sign, and it said St. Nicholas Church and a mosque, okay? So I followed the arrow, and I found the mosque, very small, and I wanted to follow to find the church. And so I finally stopped in a fruit store or something and asked where the church was. And they didn't understand English. So anyway, I asked for this church, and finally one man understood what I wanted. And I was absolutely almost laughed at his response. He said, here's how you get there. But he said, it's no longer useful. And of course, what he meant was, you know, it was one of the many Christian churches, many, many Maronite, as we know in the north, that were occupied, ruined. The Maronites had to go to the south. And They want their churches back. They want to get back into their cities. They haven't been back since 1974. And you know what? If they don't go in the next 30 or 40 years, a lot of them won't be alive to continue the fight to get back. So all these different elements. You have the political element because you have the North and South divided, Turk-occupied, and the Greek part of the Republic. And then you've got the religious question because of the 81% Christians, only 3% are Catholic. You have the Maronite, the Latin Rite, and the Armenian. And I must say that of all the different ceremonies I attended, or tried to attend, because I noticed on the plane going down to Cyprus, I was reading over everything we got from the press office. And I noticed that none of the journalists were allowed inside any of the facilities. The only people that got inside were those who were on the papal plane. So we got inside the sports center on Sunday for the mass where the Pope gave the Instrumentum Laboris to the patriarchs from the Middle East. We got in that simply because it was a massive event. It was inside the stadium. But any of the other churches, presidential palace, they allowed the state-run broadcast radio and TV to get in, and then the people on the papal plane. So we didn't see the inside. But when Saturday we went to go to the Holy Cross Church, there's this huge complex that's owned by the Franciscans, the custody of the Holy Land. And that's where the Nunciature is, the Franciscans stay, the Holy Cross Church, a parish, Latin Rite.
Is that where the Pope was staying as well?
Yeah, that's where the Pope was staying. And fascinating, this was in the buffer zone. And actually, my understanding is that the Pope's window looked out into the ravaged, devastated, not taken care of Turkish-occupied part. And the soldiers could not have been nicer. But I said to one, I said, you know, you're doing your job. You're supposed to keep us out and protect the Holy Father and everything else. Obviously, that's understandable. And we can't do our job in the sense of covering things, getting the color. We'd heard that a mufti from the north, a Muslim mufti, was going to come. A car came. We thought it was.
Did.
Well, no, actually, the word spread right away, and a couple of stories were carried the next day that the mufti had come. But it turned out to be a Sufi who is a sage, a Muslim sage, an elderly man. Because the Pope had said he was open to a meeting. This man came, this sheikh. And they did meet. He went in the courtyard, and he and the Pope met. And I guess when the Pope was told he was there, he turned around, and this man was sitting down. And he apologized for sitting down. He said, "I'm an old man." And the Pope said, "I'm old, too." And they compared ages. Turns out the Pope was younger, you know. But so they had a very brief meeting. They did embrace. There were very warm, cordial feelings on an ecumenical scale as well, obviously, with the Orthodox Patriarch, the Orthodox Archbishop Christosimos. He was the only one that spoke very, very openly about the Turkish occupation of the north, the damage done, the people that have been hurt, the people that have been taken away from their homes and their churches. And the Pope tread a very careful line. He called a spade when he had to, but he did not say anything in such a way that the feelings of Turkey might have been hurt, even though they are the occupiers, or the feelings of the Greek Cypriots or somebody else. So speaking for the political situation, it was, I guess we could say, thank the Lord, it was Archbishop Christosimos.
John, what was your strongest impression?
It was a good trip for the Holy Father. All of the lines were carefully walked. He knows the realities of the city, of the entire country. He knows the division. He saw, he could see much of this himself. And I think he experienced what a lot of us experienced, and that is huge hospitality and friendship. The friendliness of these people. And anything I needed for the 5 days I was in Cyprus, I just had to ask somebody at the hotel, somebody at the media center. They went out of their way to help me.
Just briefly, an important week here in the Vatican because
oh, my word.
End of the year of the priest is being celebrated.
An amazing 3 days, and of course it's so wonderful. You walk around the area where we are right now, around Vatican City, and, you know, one out of every three people you see is wearing a Roman collar. Many priests have come with their confreres. Some have come with pilgrimages, groups from their parish or hometown. So they've had various reflections and talks at the Roman basilicas. There was a mass the opening day with Cardinal Hemes, prefect of the Congregation for Clergy, at St. Paul's Outside the Walls. The Thursday night vigil and Friday morning mass with the Holy Father, 15,000 priests. Monsignor Marini, the liturgical master of papal ceremonies, is said that 15,000 is the largest number of priests ever to concelebrate with the Pope in the Vatican. A remarkable moment, I said on my blog yesterday, I hope that these men feel great joy in who they are, in their priesthood, in what they do. And it's a beautiful celebration to see all these smiling faces, hear all the different languages.
And it's a moment in which I think they need to be reinforced in their role.
Oh, absolutely. No, a critical moment in the church in which, and we need to know. I mean, the faithful have to know. We do know that there's wonderful priests, those who work at Vatican Radio, who work in parishes we go to in Rome, who work in our parishes at home. We know the good ones. And those are the ones that we always have to thank and pray for and truly thank them. Go up to them and say, Father, thanks for being who you are.
Thank you very much, Joan.
God bless.